Hey folks, this is the Patriot, Dale Wilkes, talking to you, and you better be listening to the Attitude of Aggression Wrestling Podcast, because if you're not, I'm going to hook you up in an Uncle Slam, and you wished you would have.
Welcome back, folks, to the Attitude of Aggression Wrestling Podcast. This is episode number 194. I am your host, Big Dave, and I am here on a very strange weekend for the podcast. Really, it's one of these odd ones because everybody seems to be tied up and busy this weekend. Old Gator had stuff going on. He wasn't around. Big Rick of the Two-Man Band Podcast, Whitewater Rafting. Tried to get a hold of Greg DeMarco to see if I could get him to do some preview stuff. Greg had soccer stuff with his kids, and shit, I just finally said, you know, I just got to fly solo on this thing. And that's what I did on the on episode 193, the preview show for NXT TakeOver Chicago. We're not going to get into the results of NXT TakeOver Chicago on this episode. Suffice it to say, I did pretty well, damn well on my predictions, might be one way to put it. It was weird. He couldn't even tell when that episode posted. It's like, you know, I started looking at our feed and I was like, is this thing, has it actually hit like iTunes and Stitcher and stuff like that? So I have no idea when that preview show came out, but I guarantee you I made all those picks before the show went on the air. But you know, as it stands right now, there's just nobody around. It's just me. Well, I mean, the wife's, you know, kind of resting next in the bedroom next door. It's just me flying solo here again on episode 194. I mean, you know, on a weekend like this, there's really only one song that can kind of summarize what I'm doing here this weekend. Oh, yeah. It's what I'm doing here. Sing it, George.
I drink alone.
Yeah, drinking alone.
Yeah, with nobody else.
That's what it's come down to, I guess.
I drink alone. Yeah, with nobody else.
Yeah, you know when I grab my bone.
I prefer to be by myself.
I can't, don't even have the heart for
now
phone grabbing here.
Morning, just before breakfast.
Uh-huh.
I don't want no coffee or tea.
Nope.
Just me and my good buddy Wiser. That's all I ever need, because I drink alone.
George has got the right idea. He really does.
Nobody else. Yeah, you know what, I drink alone. I prefer to be by myself.
I never quite understood that line of the song, though. I mean, if you're drinking alone, doesn't that kind of mean that you're by yourself? So when I drink alone, I prefer to be by myself. It seems kind of self-explanatory, right? Anyhow, here's what we got going at episode number 194, as this will wrap up kind of the backlash NXT TakeOver Chicago weekend. I'm going to review Monday Night Raw and Monday Night Raw from May 15th, 2017, and SmackDown Live from the following night, May 16th, 2017. And then I'm going to preview Backlash for you guys, let you guys know how I think the SmackDown exclusive pay-per-view is going to go down. And that should set us up. And I guess the following episodes will have reviews of those big events as we inch and creep closer to episode number 200. So yeah, let's get into it, man. This is actually, now we're talking the here and now, because this is all very current stuff. The latest editions of Raw, the latest editions of SmackDown Live, and let's get into it, huh? Good idea. folks. So Monday Night Raw coming your way May 15th, 2017 from the Prudential Center in Newark, New Jersey, also known as The Rock. If you not that rock, a different kind of rock. If you listen to, you know, what Cole said and when he announced all this stuff. So yeah, Monday Night Raw from Newark, New Jersey. This thing gets going with Kurt Angle coming out to tell us the news, the big news story that came last week, that Braun Strowman shattered his elbow in the attack by Roman Reigns last week. It required surgery, and Braun might be out for up to 6 months. Now, everything we've heard behind the scenes says that the six-month estimate is a work, even though Braun did have surgery. They're expecting him to be back in time for SummerSlam, where he will probably challenge Brock Lesnar for the Universal Championship. But as far as the storyline goes, Braun might be out for up to 6 months. And, you know, and it's unfortunate because Braun, of course, we knew he had his sights set on Brock Lesnar in the Universal Championship. So what do we do now? Well, Kurt Angle comes up with this big-time announcement, this game-changing announcement, that there's going to be, for the first time ever, an Extreme Rules Fatal 5-Way match. And the winner will get the shot at Brock Lesnar and the Universal Championship. The five guys involved will be Roman Reigns, Seth Rollins, Samoa Joe, Finn Balor, and Bray Wyatt. That's a hell of a fivesome right there. You know, Cole may not have been engaging in too much hyperbole when he was saying that it could be a match that redefines the direction of the new era. Very well could be. However they do this thing, it could be a big indicator as to where they want to go in the future as far as Monday Night Raw goes. So after we get this announcement, Roman comes out and says that they don't need a fatal five-way. He is the number one contender. This is his yard. He beat Undertaker at WrestleMania, and he's the only one on Raw who can beat. He's the only one on Raw who can beat Brock Lesnar. So at this, Finn Balor comes out to remind Roman of what he told Seth, namely that he was the first Universal Champion and he never lost his title. So if there is a line, it starts behind Finn Balor. Roman, you know, he tells Finn, you know, Finn, you've got heart. I'll give you that much. But Roman just doesn't think that he has the killer instinct to be able to beat Brock Lesnar and, you know, that whole thing. So Finn reminds Roman, though, that on Finn's first night on Monday Night Raw, he beat Roman Reigns. At this, Samoa Joe comes out, says it's not about heart and it's not about killer instinct and it's not about anyone's yard or any of that kind of shit. It's about actions and results, like him taking action to put Seth Rollins in the coquina clutch and Seth's body going lifeless. And when he enters his fatal five-way match, that'll be an action, with the result being him winning and taking on Brock Lesnar for the Universal Championship. The lights go out. You get the shit happens. Bray Wyatt mystically appears in the ring and says that the other three guys are, you know, they're all afraid of the beast and they will all fall or run. And you know, of course, Bray Wyatt says that he's going to conquer the beast. It's like, you know, I seem to remember when you were supposed to take on Brock Lesnar, you bitched out of that whole situation, Bray. So now we're supposed to think that you're ready for this, huh? Well, I kind of doubt it. But Seth Rollins shows up to say that the fans in New Jersey, they didn't come here to listen to a bunch of talk. They came to see a fight. Seth charges the ring, and he charges after Joe, and the brawl is on. And you get to see the stuff, you know, we've said it before, you know, there's a few certainties in professional wrestling, right? Dean Ambrose will always beat Kevin Owens. Roman Reigns will always beat Rusev, and he'll also always beat Bray Wyatt. And that holds true here, as Roman just decks Bray Wyatt with a Superman punch. Finn takes down Roman Reigns with a sling blade and then wipes out Roman and Seth Rollins with a somersault plancha as Raw is off and running in a big way. And like I said, that should be one hell of a match at Extreme Rules. I would much rather see it be a fatal five-way elimination match. You only have one guy left. They've done a lot of that lately. I think that works better because you get a definitive winner. It's not so fluky that, oh, you know, first guy to get a pinfall or submission gets the win. I greatly prefer the elimination style because you get a definitive victor. And I think with this fivesome, man, what a match that would be if it came down to just one guy left, and how would that all play out? But for now, and we'll see if they change that. I mean, there's always a possibility that could change. We've seen, you know, they did it at WrestleMania with stuff changing into elimination matches and things. And it's worked out very well on some of the Fatal 5-Ways on 205 Live. So we'll see what they do with this thing. But that, yeah, that should be a hell of a match. No two ways about it in Baltimore in a few weeks. Backstage, Seth, Roman, and Finn are at each other, with Seth saying how he's beaten Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns before. Technically, that's true. The other thing, hold on, before I get to that. Kurt Angle shows up and he books two huge matches for tonight. One of them is Seth Rollins versus Bray Wyatt for the first time ever, and the other one is Roman Reigns versus Finn Balor. So you got a few things going on here. A big, huge main event match is made on Monday Night Raw. And of course, it's the same way you always look at it. There's two ways of looking at this. Are they giving away stuff, or do they need to do something to bolster ratings and make Raw must-see TV? I'm leaning towards the latter in this situation. I don't think that they're giving away matches, especially, you get one match, it goes to a finish, as we'll talk about here. The other one gets a non-finish sort of situation. But those are two massive matches. Also, as when we get to the Roman Reigns-Finn Balor match, listening to the commentary, where Michael, it's like, I don't get these assholes. I understand revisionist history and stuff, but they're saying that Roman Reigns had Brock Lesnar beaten at WrestleMania 31, and Booker's like, I was there, and yeah, Roman was going to win. It's like, dude, I was there too. A lot of us were there. Roman Reigns had just got laid out by an F5 by Brock Lesnar. Brock was busted open. Both guys were ripe for the picking. That's why Seth cashed in the briefcase. I get really offended and tired of listening to this. It's a foregone conclusion Roman was going to win that match. Bullshit. Roman had had his ass kicked in that match. So did Brock. That one was anybody's match. And yes, I'd like to see how it all concludes, and I'm sure we're going to get that. But whenever they do that now, at WrestleMania 31, Roman was on his way to victory. Maybe. And not this foregone conclusion like these assholes were making it sound on this episode. But I digress there. Anyway, we get two awesome matches booked by the Raw general manager, and off we go. First match of the night, Jeff Hardy takes on Sheamus, as the two teams that will be competing at Extreme Rules for the Raw Tag Team Championship go at it. The match gets going. Jeff dumps Sheamus over the top rope and tries a slingshot flying body press, but Sheamus is just going to catch him and slams him against the barricade. Sheamus gets a near fall after a flying knee drop. Jeff Hardy rallies, though, as he hits his double feet to the groinal, the lower region, groinal area move that he does, and then the basement dropkick follow-up. Sheamus counters the twist of fate and crushes Jeff with a running knee strike for a two count. Sheamus is going to come off the top rope, and Jeff catches him with a quasi-stunner sort of maneuver. It looked like quasi-stunner, possibly trying to get in the twist of fate. However it worked out, it looked more stunner than twist of fate. And that scores Jeff Hardy another near fall. Cesaro's going to get up on the ring apron, and Matt Hardy gets up there to intercept him. Sheamus then looks like he's trying to bro kick Matt. I think they botched this a little bit. And the second time around, Sheamus gets in a kick. I don't know if it qualifies as the bro kick or not, but whatever he does, he kicks Matt off the apron into Cesaro. But when he turns around, he walks right into a twist of fate. Jeff Hardy then connects with the Swanton Bomb, and Jeff Hardy gets the victory over Sheamus. So the more things change, the more they stay the same. The Hardys still have not taken a L since they returned to the WWE. They continue to look strong. Sheamus and Cesaro, of course, coming off that huge, awesome performance in the tag team turmoil match the week before, kind of take us a little bit of a step back as Sheamus takes the loss. This, to me, would have been a good opportunity, a good moment to give Sheamus a win over Jeff Hardy. But, the Hardys are strong enough. They can afford some kind of, less than clean victory, some sort of clusterfuck sort of finish. They can afford that. So I thought this was a kind of a wasted opportunity. But speaking of wasted opportunities and head scratching booking, let's go to Sasha Banks versus Alicia Fox. Now, Alicia Fox has Noam Dar at ringside, and this match comes about due to the controversy the week before, where, as we discussed on the last Raw review, Alicia Fox did have her shoulder up prior to the three count, and somebody noticed that, so they booked a rematch. Similar to that match, Alicia starts off with her hitting her bridging Northern Lights suplex, but only gets a one count out of this thing. Sasha unloads with clotheslines, a dropkick, and a flying head scissors. Then Sasha goes for the bank statement, but Alicia Fox holds on to the top rope. And then she dumps Sasha out of the ring. So Sasha's holding on. Alicia Fox is going to dump her out of the ring. Sasha slams her back into the ring apron. She gets back in and tries to pin Alicia Fox with a small package. But this does not work out so well, and Alicia escapes. Sasha is very slow, apparently still feeling the effects of where she fell onto the ring apron. So her back's badly messed up. She's very slow to get up. This allows Alicia Fox to hit a scissors kick that makes Booker T very happy. And she hits it to Sasha's bank. And Alicia Fox gets a stunning victory over Sasha Banks. And you've got to sit there and say, why? Why are we doing this? Why does Alicia Fox need to beat Sasha Banks? I don't understand that decision at all. You know, Alicia Fox should be jobbing to everybody in sight right now. There is absolutely no plausible reason, no viable reason why you would have her beat one of your true stars in this kind of a match. I don't get it. I don't get why you would have Alicia Fox win this match. It makes no sense to me. It just makes Sasha look even weaker than she should be. And I understand creating parody and all that kind of stuff. That's fine. But man, you know, where was Mickie James in this episode? Nowhere to be found. That sort of thing. So it's a head scratcher. That's for damn sure. So from there we get Dean Ambrose takes on The Miz for the Intercontinental Championship. Damn good match here we got out of these two guys. Miz gains control early on in the match by slamming Dean into the ring steps and hitting his running corner clothesline. Dean is going to fight back, low bridges Miz, and then hits his suicide dive. Dean hits a running bulldog and almost pins Miz with a hammerlock cradle, or lavarista cradle, or whatever you want to call it. Dean avoids Miz charging in, hits his top rope elbow drop, but still can't put the Miz away. Miz then brilliantly avoids the lunatic lariat and counters with the skull-crushing finale, but Dean kicks out, and this is when the match to me really seemed to pick up. Up until then, it was okay, some back and forth with Dean mostly dominating, but once Miz sidesteps the lunatic lariat and hits that skull-crushing finale, business picks up, as JR would say. From here, Dean is going to knock Miz to the floor and wants to come off the top rope. Maurice gets in the way, but Dean is basically, he's going to come off the top rope anyway. Doesn't matter what Maurice is doing. So Miz gets his wife out of the way just before Dean crashes down on him with an elbow that drives Miz against the ring barricade. Maurice gets involved again at this point, distracting the referee, and Miz wants to use the distraction to hit Dean with a low blow. But Dean catches him in the act, and then an irate Dean Ambrose is going to kick Miz in the groinal region. The ref sees it all, disqualifies Dean Ambrose, and Miz wins a damn good match, but doesn't win the Intercontinental Championship. So, you know, very good stuff here, and we're going to see how this kind of progresses as the night goes along. But a very good match. Miz wins by disqualification, doesn't win the title. So we'll get into that in a little while. But pretty cool, man. When Miz hit that skull-crushing finale, you had to think, oh, man, that might be it. But no, it wasn't. And excellent stuff there. A really enjoyable match between these two guys who seem to be amping up their rivalry again quite a bit. Backstage, Charlie Caruso asks Finn Balor if he's ready to step into the big dog's yard tonight. Finn says, you know, it may be Roman's yard, but it's his universe. So, yep, you know, there you go. So very apropos, and we're going to get to see that match very soon. Alexa Bliss, she comes out. She just dominates the fools in the crowd in Newark, calling Newark the sweat gland of America, and saying that the people of Newark are the poster children for failure. And she's gotten really good at this whole countering the what chant that goes on. She's really listened to Stone Cold Steve Austin. The fans start getting on her about the what thing. And she says, if I'm a total failure, say what? And the fans, of course, you know, just doing whatever without listening. What? And she goes, exactly. So, yeah, Alexa Bliss continues to dominate and just make a mockery of the people in the audience who don't know how to listen. You guys, when Alexa's in the ring, you know, maybe you stop wetting her, or if you are going to wet her, at least listen, so that when she tries to pull that shit, then she just gets silenced. Now that would be fun to turn that around on her. But Yeah, you actually have to listen to what the girl's saying. She tells the fans in New York that if they want Newark, if they want to see a winner and a goddess, look no further than Alexa Bliss, the one true goddess of WWE. So Alexa continues to rip the people of Newark a new one, and this finally convinces Bayley to come out, and she gives Alexa, quote, mad props, end quote, for doing everything she said she was going to do. But as for the whole goddess thing, well, Bayley is invoking her rematch clause at Extreme Rules. Alexa says that Bayley doesn't know how to be extreme, and, you know, she should just sit at the kids' table and leave the extreme stuff to the adults. Well, this, of course, is going to piss off Bayley, and she attacks, and she drop kicks Alexa out of the ring, but an overzealous Bayley goes after Alexa, who's going to catch Bayley by the head and whiplashes her off the second rope, because, you know, the hugster was trying to press her advantage. Alexa is then going to grab a kendo stick from under the ring and gives Bayley a taste of what extreme really is. Whacks her pretty damn well in the back of the neck, maybe the back of the head a little bit. Pretty damn good shot with that kendo stick. Didn't look like it gave too much. And Alexa Bliss continues just to improve by leaps and bounds from one week to the next. Nobody, and I mean nobody outside of, say, John Cena or The Rock or people like that are delivering promos on a weekly basis like Alexa Bliss is. I mean, she is owning it. She's got that natural charisma and a real good way to present herself to people. She listens to what's going on. She reacts very well to what's going on. She trolls the crowd when she needs to, like we saw tonight, like we saw a few weeks ago. Yeah, this girl. And if she just improves her ring skill, I mean, she's great on the mic. If I was coaching her, I'd say, look, you got the promo shit down. That's fine. We don't need to worry about that. Let's just focus solely on your ring style and your ring technique, because she's just some, you know, she's really close. I mean, she's very good in the ring already, but if she gets it to the next level, look out. This girl may indeed be a goddess before it's all said and done. So, man, she's on fire. And you got to love what's going on with Alexa Bliss. Meanwhile, backstage, we get more more progression in this whole Miz and Dean Ambrose thing. As Miz, he's quite dissatisfied with the outcome of his match with Dean. And Kurt agrees that Miz is entitled to a rematch. But that's not good enough for the Miz, who wants a stipulation where the title can change hands on a disqualification. Kurt says, consider it done. Maurice then goes off on Kurt Angle in French, and the Drifter, Elias Sampson, shows up strumming a song. Kurt asks Elias if he can help him. Well, Sampson just kind of says nothing, strums some more, and walks away. A good segment here with this whole, the whole thing with Maurice pitching Kurt out in French, and Kurt basically saying, je suis gold medalist, and next time watch your tone, and all this sort of stuff. So it's good. You even got a little Elias Sampson cameo. You got to wonder when they're going to get him involved in some sort of program. Clearly it's coming, sooner rather than later, I would imagine. But yeah, so the Drifter continues to drift around, and it's all good stuff. But yeah, we're going to get a match at Extreme Rules for the IC title between Miz and Dean Ambrose. Is that the only stipulation that the title can change hands on a disqualification? Just have an Extreme Rules match. Solve that problem completely, right? I mean, it's what the damn pay-per-view is called. Don't worry about that. Just, you know, have a Extreme Rules match at the damn pay-per-view and call it a day, right? That would work for me. From here, the Cruiserweights get involved as we get a tag team match. Neville and TJP taking on Austin Aries and Jack Gallagher. Early in the match, Gallagher is going to launch Austin Aries onto Neville and TJP, who are both standing outside the ring. The match then continues. We get some good double teaming that goes on by TJP and Neville, which allows the heels to gain an edge early on in this match, and they start to really go to work on Austin Aries. He gets worked over for a while. An ear clap by Austin Aries allows him to escape. He tags in Jack Gallagher. Gentleman Jack gets a near fall after a gut-wrench power slam on TJ Perkins. I don't think I've seen that before. Gut-wrench power slam. Yeah, nice move. Neville and then Austin Aries start brawling in the middle of the ring. And TJP's going to try to take out Austin Aries' bad knee. But with only marginal results, this only kind of damages Aries for a little while, because Aries then launches himself off the top rope to wipe out Neville on the ring floor. Gallagher then avoids a detonation kick and crushes TJP with a headbutt. Neville, though, is going to prevent Jack Gallagher from hitting TJP with the gentleman's drop kick. And, you know, he grabs onto his leg to prevent him from doing this. Meanwhile, Austin Aries wipes out Neville with the discus five arm. But the delay is more than enough to allow TJP to hit Jack Gallagher with a detonation kick, and TJP and Neville get the victory, despite Neville continuing to look quite weak. So here's the thing about this match that is kind of concerning, is that you've got Neville, the king of the cruiserweights, who just has looked pathetically weak for, I mean, leading into Payback, since Payback. Yeah, he's got a few wins here and there, but every time he's in the ring with Austin Aries, he is getting his ass kicked. Aries always gets the better of Neville lately, and it shifted too much in Austin Aries' favor. Now, I don't know if that's just because they're setting up for another Neville victory at Extreme Rules, which may be the way it goes because he's looked so damn weak. But I'd sure like to see them start to even this thing out and level this thing out a little bit, so you start to feel a little bit more about this matchup. I mean, if it's all one-sided, you know, on the kayfabe side of things, they're like, well, Austin Aries is dominating, he's going to win. But we all know behind the scenes, when somebody looks that strong, it usually means that they're headed for a fall at the pay-per-view. So I personally would like to see Neville start to get a little bit more juice behind him. We're going to see, obviously, him and TJ Perkins have some stuff to work out somewhere down the road. We're not going to get into the 205 Live review on this episode. We'll save that for later. But yeah, I've noticed that Neville's just looked pretty weak as of late. A bit of a concern. Backstage, Bailey's being tended to by a doctor. Kurt Angle comes back there, tells a banged up Bailey that even though her rematch with Alexa Bliss will take place at the Extreme Rules event, it's going to be a straight up match. Well, Bailey isn't happy about that at all because, you know, Alexa Bliss has insulted her family, called her a child. So Bailey wants her title back and she's ready to get Extreme to do it. So Kurt Angle contemplates this for a while. He says, okay, well, if you're sure about that, if that's what you want, then why don't we give Alexa a taste of her own medicine? So at Extreme Rules, it's going to be a kendo stick on a pole match for the Raw Women's Championship between Bayley and Alexa Bliss. I love Bayley as much as the next person, but yeah, that's not the kind of match where Bayley's going to excel. I expect Alexa Bliss to do some major damage with Bayley with the kendo. But maybe this is the match Bayley needs. Bayley needs a edgier side to her. And this whole hug life thing will only get her so far. She needs to kind of, modify her character a bit, I would say. So maybe that will help her. Maybe if she gets in this Extreme Rules environment and gets nasty with Alexa Bliss, that'll help her out. But I still kind of, right now, I like Alexa Bliss's chances a whole lot in that sort of situation. R-Truth, he goes to see Goldust, and he feels as though he let Goldust down in the tag team turmoil match last week. Goldust, though, he won't let R-Truth feel bad because he says, you know, R-Truth, you picked me up plenty of times when I was down. So tonight against Gallows and Anderson, it's a chance for them to claw and scratch their way back into contention. Well, as we'll see, not so much. Let's get into, though, there's two main events, and let's get into the first one. And it's Finn Balor versus Roman Reigns. Now, the first time these two guys met was in the qualifying matches for the Universal Championship, after the Universal Championship was created last year leading into SummerSlam. This is how they determined, you know, Seth Rollins, of course, was anointed one of the guys in the match, and they had a whole big, you know, Finn Balor won a Fatal 4-Way, Roman Reigns won a Fatal 4-Way, they met each other, Finn won, earned the shot, and the rest is history. And if you stuck around after Raw and watched the Finn Balor 24/7 thing then, or whatever it's called, then you learn all about the history of Finn Balor winning the first Universal Championship. Well, it's a chance for Roman Reigns to get even. And as the match gets going, Roman's power, despite him still being taped up and injured, Roman's power causes major problems for Finn early on in this match. He tosses Finn around like a child and crushes him with a big Samoan drop. Finn fights back with some forearms and a basement dropkick. Roman retaliates with a big right hand, sending Finn across the ring. But when Roman charges, Finn moves, causing Roman to crush his bad shoulder into the ring post, and this changes the momentum of the match. Outside the ring, Finn Balor is going to he punts Roman in the face. You know, when he runs across the apron and punts him in the face, and he leaps off the apron with a double stomp to Roman's back. After the commercial, they go to a commercial break. They come back. Finn Balor looks like he wants to hit the drop kick to drive Roman into the ring barricade. We've seen him do this before, but Roman just intercepts him and just charges, slamming Finn Balor spine first into the ring post. From here, Roman takes over, slams Finn into the barricade, and then hits a drive-by. He's got Finn Balor on his stomach and his chest, and Roman hits his massive drive-by that drives Finn Balor back first into the ring post. Roman then gets a near fall after a spin-out powerbomb, and then Roman is going to go for the Superman punch, but Finn kicks him in his injured ribs. Roman then goes for a powerbomb, but his ribs fail him, and he falls to the mat. Finn capitalizes on this and hits a double stomp to Roman's chest, and he presses the advantage, hits a sling blade, but Roman then connects with a Superman punch as Finn Balor is trying to go for that corner drop kick sort of thing. Roman hits a Superman punch, but Finn still kicks out of this thing. Finn kicks Roman in the chest as he goes for a spear, and then he hits another sling blade and connects with the drop kick to the corner this time. So he's got Roman set up for the coup de grace. But a damaged Finn Balor, who's been, he's been beaten up pretty well in this match by this point, he can't get to the top rope fast enough to deliver the coup de grace. Roman gets to his feet, punches Finn in the head. This causes Finn to essentially fall down, crotching himself, and then he falls into the ring. From there, Roman crushes Finn with a devastating spear, and Roman Reigns gets his win back from Finn Balor. Now, here's the thing. This is a great match. There's no doubt about that. These two guys have very good chemistry. The first match was good. This one is excellent as well. But here's the thing. This is kind of questionable booking to me, and I don't quite understand it. Because if Finn Balor can't beat a damaged Roman Reigns, who's still perceived to not be perceived, he's still taped up, so he can't be 100%. If he can't beat a non-100% Roman Reigns, then let's say he does win the fatal five-way at Extreme Rules. How are we supposed to believe that he can beat a 100% healthy Brock Lesnar? And so I question the booking of this, especially when you see how the Seth Rollins Bray Wyatt match turns out. They could have done something with this to make this a non-finish. But instead, you give Roman Reigns a clean victory over Finn Balor in this kind of situation. And this match is as clean as you could get. A clean win over Finn Balor, and Roman Reigns still taped up, not at 100%. It almost, to me, eliminates Finn Balor from any sort of legitimate contemplation that he can beat Brock Lesnar should he get the shot against Brock at the Great Balls of Fire pay-per-view. And when you say that, and you look at Roman Reigns and you're like, well, Roman's, they're probably not going to pull the trigger on that match for a while yet. So you kind of start wondering, you say, okay, if Finn can't do it, yeah, sure, he could win anyway, and that would make a good story. If Finn can't do it and Roman can't do it, do Seth, Bray Wyatt, or Samoa Joe really have a chance in this whole scenario? So I love the match, thought the match was great. I really question the booking, though. I'm not sure that was the best of moves, and it could create problems as far as suspension of disbelief later on if, by some chance, Finn Balor wins his fatal five-way, and there's a really good chance he will. So, he would have to, it's a tough one, but just some things I thought about as I was watching this match. After the match is over, Bray Wyatt comes on the Titantron to talk about the evil that dominates Raw, also known as the Beast, Brock Lesnar. And while Raw may be Kurt's show, and it may be Roman's yard, it's Bray's world. And at Extreme Rules, he's going to take his opportunity to conquer the Conqueror and become the Universal Champion. As for Seth Rollins tonight, well, will Seth be able to face evil, stare it in the eyes, and, conquer it? Or will his gutless instincts take over? And will he run? Well, naturally, after they go to a commercial break and come back, Seth Rollins is in the back. He tells Charlie Caruso that Bray Wyatt calling him gutless is pretty fucking laughable. After the year he's had with his knee almost falling off of his leg, dealing with Stephanie McMahon, dealing with Triple H, the whole Kingslayer thing. If anyone is going to slay the beast, though, he says it's going to be the man who slayed the king. So there you go, folks. Seth Rollins firing back, saying he wants to be the man to slay the beast because he's already slayed a king. Might as well go conquer the beast as well. The whole gutless thing, Seth Rollins took some major issue with that. Not surprising. What was surprising, though, is what happens in the next segment, because Goldust turns heel, folks. This came out of nowhere, and I mean, what happens is the Golden Truth are in the ring. They're getting ready for their match with Gallows and Anderson, and R-Truth is about to go into the whole what's up thing, and Goldust attacks him from behind and beats the holy hell out of him. So, and right as I'm saying all this, my lovely wife has decided that she's tired of me broadcasting alone this weekend and has decided to join the party, so to speak. You're not drinking anything like I am. No, you're drinking water. I've already done the whole I drink alone song and that sort of thing. That, you don't want that. You don't want that. That's Diet Coke and Jim Beam, so I don't think you want that. Maybe. So anyway, getting back to this discussion, yeah, Goldust turns heel, attacks R-Truth. Interesting stuff. I mean, after he beats the hell out of R-Truth and leaves him lying there, he stands over him and tells him that's what's up and walks away. Now, this, of course, is after earlier in the night where Goldust told R-Truth, oh, everything's cool, man. You've picked me up many times before. So you got to wonder about this. You know, you've got this mid-card, actually not even mid-card, lower card feud going on between a 40-something-year-old Goldust, Dustin Rhodes, and R-Truth, who's almost as old. I'm not sure the point of all this stuff was, but maybe they just said, you know, we've got enough teams on Raw. We don't need another jobber tag team. Let's split you guys up and turn Goldust heel and see where we go with that. Other than that, I've got no explanation at all as to why this thing took place. It's not that it's a bad thing, and the crowd in Newark seemed to enjoy heel Goldust. And there's a lot of this stuff going on. I mean, like I said, we're not going to talk about NXT TakeOver Chicago, other than, you know, of course, big heel turn there as well. But that kind of the theme this week, people turning heel. it's the way to go. So, yeah, Goldust turns heel, betrays R-Truth. I'm sure we'll see more of that in the coming weeks. Enzo and Cass, they come out to a big reaction from the hometown crowd in Newark, doing their whole routine. They get a big pop. Enzo's wearing New Jersey Turnpike towels on his pants and that sort of stuff, which, of course, the crowd in Newark just eats all this shit up. Titus O'Neil and Apollo Crews, they come out with Titus doing a good job of mocking Enzo and saying how, you know, Apollo Crews is going to beat Enzo down tonight and you can't teach that. Well, they get in the ring and Cass tells Titus, this is all fine and great, but it's not Enzo versus Apollo tonight. It's Titus O'Neil versus Big Cass. Titus says, wait. I'm wearing a $3,100 suit and $1,200 shoes, which exceeds the value of my entire wardrobe, but that's beside the point. So he can't wrestle tonight. Big Cass says, you know, Titus, you look great, but the match is going to happen anyway. And Titus, you won't like the way you look. I guarantee it. So a nice spinoff of the Men's Warehouse sort of thing there. And then the match gets going, and Titus, who's wearing a suit and his tie, he holds the early edge, but then he decides to take off his belt, presumably to whip Cass with it. Enzo gets up on the ring apron to distract Titus. Cass takes advantage by just planting a big old boot in Titus's face and getting the pinfall. Afterwards, as Titus is laying there all fucked up and Apollo's tending to him and trying to get him back up, Enzo decides to take some selfies. You know, takes a selfie. It's him and a downed Titus O'Neil in the ring. Well, Apollo Crews takes some issue with this and tries to tell Enzo, hey, stop. That's not cool. Enzo doesn't stop. And Apollo Crews, with a little bit of a heel tendency, kicks Enzo in the back of his head. And it looks like that. I mean, it looks like things have just started between these two teams. And it also looks like a big, huge step forward for the much needed heel turn for Apollo Crews. You want to turn somebody heel, turn this guy heel. Goldust doesn't need it. Apollo Crews desperately needs a heel turn. This was a good step in the right direction for this young man who needs something to get his character going. And just anything moving forward would be good for Apollo Crews. And I thought this was a big step, good step in the right direction for him. He doesn't, you know, it's not all about smiling and all that kind of shit. So yeah, big deal there. Apollo Crews taking not a full heel turn. Don't kid yourself. This wasn't the Goldust thing, but a definite step towards the dark side of things for Apollo Crews. Backstage, Neville tells TJP how, you know, he's very close to getting. He's just the title. He's doing very well, and the title opportunity at the Cruiserweight Championship, well, it's just around the corner. But they still have the Austin Aries problem. And tomorrow night on 205 Live, which we're not reviewing in this episode, but tomorrow night on 205 Live, they will get rid of that problem once and for all. So there you go. So now it's on to the main event of Monday Night Raw on this edition of Monday Night Raw. It's Seth Rollins versus Bray Wyatt for the first time ever, at least on the main roster. I'm sure they met on NXT. Seth controls the early goings as he hits a springboard plancha and then slams Bray Wyatt into the barricade. But when Seth tries to leap off the barricade, Bray catches him and essentially hits that Uranagi slam onto the ring barricade. The guys fight on the top rope, and Bray gets a near fall after scoring a big-time superplex. You remember, like, months ago on the podcast, quite a while, we always were saying how these guys were teasing superplexes and they never seemed to happen. Now you're getting superplexes all the time. So, you know, what changed? I don't know, but anyway, Bray Wyatt gets a superplex, gets a near fall here. He he counters a Seth Rollins attempt at a suicide dive, but Seth fights back, eventually connects with the blockbuster a few moments later. Seth hits a sling blade, a basement drop kick as Bray is outside of the ring, and then connects with the suicide dive. Seth gets a near fall after a springboard clothesline. But then Seth is going to avoid Sister Abigail and hits an enziguri. Bray Wyatt connects with that no-look clothesline as Seth is coming off the ropes. I love this move when Bray Wyatt does it, where he's facing away from the guy and he just no-look turns around and just clotheslines these people. It's a nasty move. Takes Seth out of his boots just about, and you know Bray gets a near fall out of that. Bray gets about a 2.5 count after he hits the Uranagi Slam. Seth is going to avoid Sister Abigail again, and then he lands a super kick and a Falcon's Arrow for a near fall for Seth. Bray rolls outside the ring, presumably to avoid the frog splash that Seth Rollins is setting up for, but Seth flies anyway, driving Bray into the barricade. At this point in the match, Samoa Joe runs through the crowd, and you could actually see him coming through the crowd. He shows up. Somebody not working the best camera angle there because we could see him coming, but hey, you know, these guys are only human. So he shows up and, you know, he attacks. He attacks Seth. This causes a disqualification. Joe then roughs up Seth with gets him in the ring, hits that corner elbow head kick combination. Joe then wipes out Seth further with his own version of the Uranagi Slam. Bray Wyatt gets back in the ring, and it looks like he's upset about getting disqualified, but then they decide to beat the hell out of Seth Rollins. So Bray and Samoa Joe beat up on Seth for a bit, and it seems like we may have a new alliance here, but it doesn't last very long as Bray Wyatt wipes out Samoa Joe with Sister Abigail and then does the exact same thing to Seth Rollins as Bray Wyatt is left standing tall at the end of this edition of Monday Night Raw. And Bray Wyatt with, I think, you know, if you look at who comes out of the five guys involved in that big match coming up at Extreme Rules, who's got the momentum, who's got the juice? Well, on this episode of Raw, clearly Roman Reigns probably in the lead, and Bray Wyatt, after this whole thing goes down, would be right behind him with, you know, Seth and Joe and Finn. You got to say Finn's bringing up the rear because he's the one who lost clean in this whole episode. Interesting stuff. They still got a couple weeks to see how things play out, but yeah, Bray Wyatt, Roman Reigns, kind of the, you know, charging out of the gates quick as we see who's going to get the momentum built for this big time fatal five-way at Extreme Rules. So, yeah, let's move on then to SmackDown Live, the go-home show for Backlash, and we got to get to our preview show for that. May 16th, 2017, for Manchester, New Hampshire. I didn't even know they had an arena in Manchester, New Hampshire. Babe, you know where Manchester, New Hampshire is? No. Me neither. I didn't think they would have anything in New Hampshire, but no offense to our people in New Hampshire. Kind of cool that they got this arena. They got SmackDown Live. I mean, hey, that's awesome. I mean, that's probably the biggest thing that's happened in Manchester, New Hampshire all year, maybe. Possibly. Huh? All decade? I don't know about all decade. Let's not get carried away, but we'll see. It's the Backlash go-home show, though. So yeah, my wife actually, while we paused the recording there for a second, she started looking up stats about Manchester, New Hampshire. 110,000 people. Not bad. It's about 250,000 people less than, well, no. About 200,000 people. What do we have here in Bakersfield? 350,000 now. So yeah, 240,000 less than Bakersfield. And I know if you've heard this podcast enough and you think Bakersfield, California, and you've heard a lot of people make fun of that. Yeah, look, we're not as big as our friends up north in Fresno, but Bakersfield's a big fucking city. And, you know, but anyway, Manchester, 110,000 people, the largest city in New Hampshire. I probably could have figured that out. And the 10th largest city in New England. So, hey, that may explain why Manchester got this edition of SmackDown Live. Well, let's get into it, though, as we gear up and get this thing going and the go-home show for Backlash. The Kevin Owens highlight reel. Kevin Owens apparently hijacked the Geritron 6000. He's taken over the show because its original host will never, ever, ever be seen again. Jericho used to be obsessed with lists and scarves and gifts, but the only list he's on now, folks, is the injured list. And AJ Styles is in for the same this weekend at Backlash. Well, AJ comes out to say how, you know, he watched Kevin Owens steal Chris Jericho's thunder and basically everything from him from over a year, but he never really thought that he would stoop so low as to steal Chris Jericho's show. Kevin Owens says he does everything better than Chris Jericho, and that will include beating AJ Styles. AJ says that, you know, on Sunday, he'll be bringing the United States Championship back to the USA, which, of course, elicits a USA, USA chant from the fans in Manchester. But why wait till Sunday? Let's go right now. Well, Jinder Mahal comes out. Now, look, here's the thing about Jinder Mahal I'll say right now at the outset. And you're going to you watch this back. You'll notice this about Jinder Mahal. The guy looks fantastic. He's getting a push. It's deserved and all that stuff. But here's the problem I have with Jinder Mahal. Dude, you've got to put the microphone closer to your mouth because you're too soft-spoken and you can't hear a fucking thing you're saying. And it's a problem here in this early part here, but not as noticeable as at the very end of SmackDown when he's talking to Randy Orton. You can't hear shit that Jinder's saying because he's got the fucking microphone too far away from his mouth. Dude, you got to get it up there. And make sure that people can actually hear what the hell you're saying. It's not very effective when, you know, you don't have this stuff. So, anyhow, it's a minor complaint, but it's something that I think would help Jinder Mahal. Cause he is kind of, the guy looks great. He is kind of soft spoken though, a little bit. And I don't want to see him get lost in the shuffle cause he's made great strides. We're going to see it coming up here. But it's just something I noticed on this episode of SmackDown. You got to get the microphone closer to your mouth, Jinder, so that people can hear you. That, to me, it's not the fact that, you know, you can compensate for the fact that you may not have the most booming voice in the world, like me, by getting the microphone closer to your mouth. Just saying. So anyway, though, Jinder comes out and says that he was supposed to be Kevin Owens' guest, not AJ Styles. And tonight, Jinder Mahal is going to do what he did to Randy Orton last week, put AJ down for the 1-2-3. AJ says that after tonight, Jinder might not even make it to Backlash. Jinder says, he quotes a phrase from Gandhi. The essential gist of it is, to find yourself, sometimes you must lose yourself. And AJ, you're going to lose tonight. Kevin Owens agrees with all this and says it's going to be a bad week for AJ Styles, who's not only going to lose to Jinder tonight, he's also going to lose to Kevin Owens at Backlash. AJ Styles chases Kevin Owens out of the ring and tells Jinder, get your ass in this ring, boy, for the AJ Styles highlight reel. And that's how SmackDown in Manchester gets going. And the first match of the night is AJ Styles takes on Jinder Mahal. The two number one contenders for the respective titles on the line at Backlash. After some back and forth in the early going, AJ Styles hits a variation of the phenomenal forearm and the phenomenal blitz. The Singh brothers, though, they're going to get involved. And when my wife gets back in the room, she left for a moment. She'll be the first to tell you she does not like the Singh brothers. She likes them fine, but she doesn't like the name Singh brothers, since thinks that they need to go back to being the Bollywood boys. A lot of I would tend to agree with her on that. But the Singh brothers get involved and they distract AJ Styles, which enables Jinder Mahal to connect with a running knee strike for a near fall. Jinder continues with his power game as he slams AJ chest first into the turnbuckles. AJ counters an attempt at a superplex he, you know, does what he does. You've seen AJ Styles do this quite a bit, where he ducks underneath, goes through the legs of Jinder Mahal. He's going to do something, but he runs right into Jinder's boot, and you know, that puts AJ Styles down for a while. AJ Styles, however, is going to catch Jinder coming off the second rope with a drop kick. AJ Styles then gets a near fall after a sliding forearm. Jinder avoids the Ushiguroshi and gets another very near fall with another stiff kick to AJ's face. AJ connects with a Pele kick, a clothesline into the corner, and then he does get in the Ushiguroshi for a near fall. AJ crushes Jinder Mahal with a drop kick as Jinder is on the ring floor. A hard kick by AJ, or excuse me, a head kick. So AJ's like on the ring apron, and Jinder comes into the corner, and AJ hits his kick to Jinder's head. This puts Jinder down and puts him in position for the springboard 450. But at this point, the Singh brothers distract the referee. I already told them, Love, that you don't like the Singh brothers' name. You think they need to be the Bollywood boys. But anyway, the Singh brothers distract the referee. Meanwhile, on the other side, because Kevin Owens has been on commentary the whole time, Kevin Owens smashes the United States Championship belt into AJ Styles' knee. From there, Jinder Mahal hits what they're calling the Coloss, which we call the Cobra Clutch Slam. Now it's the Coloss, which I guess is Punjabi for finish. And believe it or not, folks, Jinder Mahal pins AJ Styles. And for those of you keeping score, that's 2 weeks in a row that Jinder Mahal has pinned Randy Orton and now AJ Styles. And the Maharaja continues to build momentum for Backlash. What do you think of that, Love? You're kind of looking like you're okay with all this Jinder Mahalism. No? Not really? Thumbs down. Thumbs down or not, Jinder Mahal continues to impress with a lot of help, of course, from the Singh brothers or whatever you want to call them. And Kevin Owens as well tonight. So big victory for the number one contender. You can talk if you want, Love. You know, you're not bound to any silence or anything. She doesn't care. WWE is doing, and you might want to comment on this, though. They're doing their damnedest to piss us off about Lana with this coming soon bullshit, which to me, God, this feels a lot like the whole Emelina thing all over again. And just lame. Lame as can be. They're just ruining her. I thought Rusev was supposed to... I saw somebody tweeting earlier tonight that Rusev was supposed to show up to confront Shane McMahon. That never happens on this episode. So I'm not sure where that went. But anyway, on we go, and we get another installment of the Fashion Files. More fashion offenses noted by Breezango, including violations for Baron Corbin and Sami Zayn, and more good stuff with the number one contenders for the SmackDown Tag Team titles. We've listened to it the last 2 weeks. We might as well listen to this one, too.
In the modeling and fashionista industry, outfit-based offenses are considered especially repulsive. In the WWE universe, dedicated garment gumshoes who investigate these faux pas are members of an elite squad known as the Fashion Police. These are their stories. Dun, dun.
Up to my ears in fashion felonies and apparel atrocities. Breeze, where are you? What are you doing? Oh, great. Another clothing catastrophe. What is this, a dirty jumpsuit you're wearing? You're lucky my tag partner isn't here right now.
Well, what if? He was!
Breeze! You truly are a master disguise.
Why does Fandango sound like Batman?
How's all the recognizance, undercover work going.
I knew what you meant. Check this out. SmackDown Live.
You love Fandango. He can't say recognizance, so he just says undercover
Exhibit A,
work.
Baron Corbin. Three shirts, all wolves. Exhibit 2, Sami Zayn. Drawers, same color as his credenza. Ah, don't do that.
Smelled the bag.
Yeah. Exhibit U.
Right. Day one is H. What does that even mean?
I don't know. Day one is it. I don't know if anyone knows. But you know what I do know? The Usos, they're good. The Usos, they're scary. The Usos, their hair is just so well conditioned and luscious. And we don't stand a chance. And
you're no cakes! Damn, you're a step out of it! You're no low-life janitor, man. You're in too deep.
Who am I?
You're a prince. Prince Pretty. The prettiest of all the princes. Okay?
Thanks, man. I needed that. What in Versace's name am I even wearing?
Shh. You had to do what you had to do. And at Backlash this Sunday, we'll be wearing the SmackDown Tag Team Championships. Yeah.
And then finally,
speaking seductively here,
our day one, Real BH. Freeze frame!
So, I'm sorry, what was that, my love? What did you say?
He's speaking seductively there for... Oh, is that better? He's speaking seductively for who?
I don't know. The whole thing's got a lot of homoeroticism.
Except for Breeze.
A lot of homoeroticism.
He's speaking to Breeze.
Yeah.
In a very small enclosed room.
Look, this is the
invading the personal space bubble.
That's
egregiously.
All right. That's okay. These guys, this fashion police stuff has been fantastic for 3 weeks
I don't know that
now.
Joan Rivers would approve.
She's dead, isn't she?
Yeah.
Well, she's not approving shit then.
Well, I don't know that she would approve here.
I don't either, but I love the fashion files and, you know, Breezango getting this great push right now. It's like every episode of this, like, it's like Southpaw Regional Wrestling.
It's what? Gorgeous dong.
I know. It is gorgeous dong. I'm sorry. I always forget.
Please.
I got to take them more seriously. They're the number one contender. So,
gorgeous dong is the number one contender.
In more ways than one.
I guess so.
Yes, exactly. Randy Orton explains that people dislike Jinder Mahal not because of the way he looks. Or the way he sounds, or any sort of intolerance in the United States, it's because he's an ass.
I was going to say, he is a jerk.
Yeah, there you go. I mean,
that is reason enough.
Kept it very simple, to the point. Gorgeous Dong, we just saw them. Now they're taking on the Colognes in this tag team match. The Colognes dominate much of the match until Tyler Breeze floors Primo with an Enziguri. Fandango gets the hot tag and gets a near fall on Epico after a spinning heel kick. Epico nearly steals the win with a roll-up, but Fandango plants Epico with the Falcon's Arrow to get the victory. After the match is over, the Usos come out and they own Gorgeous Dong again with another solid promo that, you know, you just got to play. This is one of these situations where the Usos are killing it so well, you've got to actually play their shit here just to hear how good it is.
Third time to be champions. Here might come somebody who thinks a little different.
Yeah, speaking of the champions.
Look at you. Look at them, Moose. Check them out. 5 days until Backlash. You want to be funny. You want to try to do it for the laughs. You want to try to do it for the retweets and the likes. You want to do it for the gram. But you know why we do this? We do this for this. Like, we do this for this day one-ish.
Yes, sir.
But role play, huh? Role play.
Yeah.
We did it. They got it. More like good guys and bad guys.
Hey, role play more like maybe cowboys versus Indians, right?
Nah, Oos, it's more like cops and robbers.
Nah, what about cops versus inmates?
Inmates, yeah. But how about we do this and just flip the script right quick, bruh?
This is not your precinct, cop.
No. Nah. Welcome to the Uso Penitentiary. Well, we make all the rules, and then 5 days at Backlash, the Usos are taking Breeze Dango to trial. Until then, Us, read them their rights. We have a right to remain vicious. Anything you say can and will leave you with stitches. We have a right to put your ass in a gurney. If you can't afford a gurney, one will not be provided for you. Now, do you understand your rights? Because right now they feel a goosebumps behind their neck, and they feel a goosebumps running through their body, and their head is on a swivel because they feel like somebody creeping behind you. No! It's not paranoia. It's the
Man.
Yeah.
That was a good promo.
Oh, I mean, and that's not even as good as the one last week. The 12 days promo was just fucking classic. This match between Gorgeous Dong and the Usos has been built up really, really well, and they have not interacted with each other physically at all in the build of this thing. Not one physical anything between them. Between the gorgeous dong doing the fashion files, and the Usos the last 2 weeks cutting these promos and just essentially leaving poor Breezango speechless. What the fuck are you going to say in response to that, right?
So how do you think this match is going
to
go?
Well, we're going to get to our... we're going to get,
or is it going to be a really...
we're going to get to the backlash preview in just a moment, and I'll give you my thoughts on that one, and you can chime in if you want. But yeah, just fantastic promo. The question, of course, yeah, like my wife is saying, will the fashion police get taken to the Usos penitentiary at Backlash?
And bent over.
Probably. I'm sure there's anal involved in this whole thing somewhere.
Well, that's what it seems like it's building up to.
Yeah, you know, that they should have that as a stipulation. Lunar
little rooms.
Loser gets
invasion of personal space.
Loser gets anal. That
would
be
Batman. Yeah. Prison.
Prison sex.
No gurney.
Yeah, you don't get a gurney.
You get it on the floor.
Well, on that note, let's move along. Shane McMahon comes out for the six-woman tag team contract signing. Natalya says how pathetic her opponents are as they feign unity. Becky, meanwhile, has had the chance to join them, and you know, but she wasn't into it. And, you know, Natalya says, you know, you had the chance to join us. You didn't do it. I can't wait to say I told you so. Well, Becky then says that there was no way she was joining Natalya's goon squad, and she can't wait to slap all their faces at Backlash. Naomi talks about snatching all of them, including James Ellsworth, who she refers to as a she. Charlotte, well, she's all about what's going to happen in Chicago. And after that, the queen is coming after her crown, and she points right at Naomi's title. A delusional James Ellsworth tells Becky that he knows that Becky wants to hook up with him, but she has, in the words of Shane's dad, no chance in hell with him. As for Charlotte, Charlotte might want him to be her king, but he's only interested in being the prince to the princess of Staten Island. And you could feel the bile rising in your throat. As for Naomi, it won't be long before Carmella snatches Naomi's title and steals her glow. Naomi shoves James Ellsworth. Carmella slams Naomi's face into the table. And Shane, before this whole thing can get really out of control, books Carmella versus Naomi for immediately. And they go to the commercial break. They come back. It's Carmella versus Naomi. And Naomi just dominates the early going of this match. Carmella looks really, really rough. All she's doing is hiding, screaming like a little bitch, which she kind of is. Ellsworth at one point grabs Carmella's leg to prevent her rebounding off of the ropes, but the ref sees this and he ejects James Ellsworth from the ringside area. Sorry, James, you're out of here. Naomi does her, she grabs Carmella, drags her and does her twerk move on her. And all Carmella does, like I said, is a lot of screaming and a lot of running. And Naomi hits Carmella with a drop kick. And as Naomi pursues her on the ring floor, Carmella finally does something and connects with a big super kick. Carmella then gets a near fall after a Bronco Buster. A big head kick by Naomi swings things back to the champion's favor. Naomi then unloads with her Mortal Kombat kicks, floors Carmella with a head kick, and she's going to go to the top rope to presumably try and finish off the Princess of Staten Island. When she does this, Tamina and Natalya, they get involved. The ref sees this, boots Tamina and Natty away from ringside as well. But as they leave, naturally, a brawl ensues between Natalya and Tamina and Charlotte and Becky. And all this stuff is going on. Becky and Charlotte, they throw down with the girls. As this is going on, Tamina's going to deck Charlotte. And at this point, Naomi is going to hang on to the ropes, and as she's doing this, she kicks Tamina in the back, knocking Tamina down. But this allows Carmella to sneak up behind. Using the distraction, she rolls up Naomi, and Carmella pins the SmackDown Women's Champion. Yeah, exactly.
Disgusting.
Very, you know, in a match that she had no business at all winning. And yeah, Carmella gets the victory in this situation, presumably creating some momentum for her team and assuring her a future title opportunity. But
Why?
If you pin the champion, you get a title shot. That's just kind of the unwritten rule of pro wrestling.
I don't like her.
I know you don't.
She's awful.
Okay. All right. It's all right. The New Day coming soon, but not soon enough. God, we need some help on the SmackDown tag team. Although I got to say, Gorgeous Dong and the Usos are quite entertaining right now. American Alpha's just gone. I don't even know where they've been lately. Dolph Ziggler.
Vacation.
Possibly.
Bahamas.
Maybe. Dolph Ziggler shows us all the great things that he's done in the in his WWE career. Because at first he wants to show us all the great things that Shinsuke Nakamura has done. And the footage isn't found because, of course, Nakamura hasn't done anything on the main roster yet. But Dolph shows us all of his great footage, such as winning the United States Championship, winning the Intercontinental Championship 5 times, the Money in the Bank winner, world champion, so forth and so on. At Backlash, he will expose Nakamura for the fraud he is and beat him before he even begins. Sami Zayn, he gets caught up with telling Dasha how he thinks Baron Corbin is threatened by him, because Sami reminds Baron that he's not so dominant and that Sami is, in many ways, more dangerous than Baron Corbin is, because Sami won't stay down, will just keep getting up no matter what, yada, yada, yada. Well, naturally, Baron Corbin is going to attack him from behind, lays him out and tells Sami that he should learn to stay down. Otherwise, Baron will knock him down permanently.
Ouch.
Yeah. So that brings us to the main event of SmackDown Live this week. It's Randy Orton taking on Baron Corbin. As the match gets going, Baron Corbin gets a near fall after he does that high-speed exit and re-entry move where he slides out, goes around the ring post, jumps back in, and it happens so fast, opponents don't know what the fuck's happening. He does this and connects with a thunderous clothesline. Randy Orton tries to counter that, so Baron Corbin does this speed move a second time. Randy Orton tries to counter that, but Baron Corbin still floors Randy Orton with a big boot for another near fall. Things change, though, when Randy Orton sidesteps Baron Corbin as he's charging into the corner. This causes Corbin to slam shoulder first into the ring post. Randy Orton then scores with a power slam, and Baron Corbin tries to escape the ring to get away from the onslaught. Instead, he sets himself up for the draping DDT. Baron Corbin then avoids the RKO and almost snags the win after the deep six. But Baron Corbin, folks, is going to go to the well one time too many as he tries that super speed exit re-entry move a third time, and this time he gets hit with the RKO, and Randy Orton gets the victory. Jinder Mahal comes out to tell Randy to savor the victory because it won't go down that way at Backlash. The Singh brothers, of course, or whatever you want to call them, the Bollywood boys, they attack from behind, but Randy fends them off, knocks Jinder Mahal to the ring floor as Jinder tries to get in the ring. Randy has the Bollywood boys or Singh brothers or whatever set up for the double draping DDT, but Jinder Mahal makes a save, and after a 3-on-1 beatdown, Jinder lays out Randy Orton with the Coloss as off to Backlash we go. Was that like the Snow White thing you're doing?
The dwarves marching along. Can you see the 7 dwarves marching along? Singing the little song.
Hi-ho, hi-ho. We're just a bunch of whores, basically.
That's true.
Yeah, that's what they're saying. Well, so on that note, we're off to Backlash. Let's get to the, let's talk about Backlash, the big event coming up. And let's run down the card, see how we think this thing is going to go. On the kickoff show, we're going to get the first match, probably the easiest one to predict, Ty Dillinger versus Aiden English. Look, I'd like to create some drama here and engage in some discussion, but there's not much need for it. No way Aiden English wins this match. Ty Dillinger is going to beat his ass. That's all there is to it. I expect it to be over very quickly. It would be nice if they give Aiden English a little bit of time to try and sell him as something other than just the jobber that he was with the Vaudevillains. I know his partner's gone, and you know he's all emotional and all this kind of stuff. I'm sure he's going to lose and cry after the match is over. And it just creates bigger issues. But there's no way. Ty Dillinger, they're bringing him along slowly. That's fine. They need to get him more injected in the you know, bigger storylines. But very little doubt in my mind that Ty Dillinger is going to beat Aiden English in this match. Anything?
Yeah. No, I agree.
All right.
Yeah, no. But I feel sorry for him, Aiden English. But
why?
Because they have his character being such a damn wuss.
Yeah.
How is that? How are you supposed to get behind somebody like that who's supposed to be, you know, they're here, they've come this far. You're supposed to portray them as strong and athletic, even if they lose. So they have him crying a lot. A lot.
Yeah, it's not too cool, but it is what it is. So another kickoff show match will be Luke Harper taking on Eric Rowan. The former Wyatt family members square off. 2 weeks ago, Eric Rowan got a surprise victory over Luke Harper in a match. Does history repeat itself here? Does Eric Rowan again get a victory over Luke Harper? Eric Rowan has shown more charisma lately on Talking Smack, which is kind of surprising. But I think Luke Harper gets the victory here. These kickoff show matches, unless they're really trying to further some important storyline, and usually not on these brand-specific pay-per-views, more on the Big Four type of pay-per-views, every once in a while you'll see the heels win, like Neville winning at WrestleMania and shit like that. But usually the baby faces, it's the rule that even old Gator says, yeah, you know, you're right about that. Usually the baby faces win. And I think this will be one of those situations. Luke Harper is going to get his win back. They need to get Luke Harper progressing. It was cool to give Eric Rowan a win. I still maintain what I said on the last SmackDown review I did. These guys being separated makes no sense. Join them back together. SmackDown needs tag teams. Get the Wyatt family, or whatever you want to call these guys. You don't even have to call them the Wyatt family anymore. Just call them the Backwood Boys.
I was very proud of Luke Harper leaving that Deliverance clan.
Yeah, that's fine. They can do this sort of thing, but, you know, and it doesn't matter. They can still kind of, you know, go in this direction and get these guys together and have them be, you know, have them join them together, and they need tag teams on SmackDown. I still don't know whether they're baby faces or heels, whatever. They would be better. This is one of these situations. They would be better together than apart again. But I think for this match, Luke Harper gets the win back and defeats Eric Rowan. It could go the other way, though. Then you get Sami Zayn versus Baron Corbin. Now, the knee-jerk reaction to this would pick Baron Corbin to win this thing. But I'm going to go the opposite way on this thing. And the reason I'm going to say that is Sami Zayn needs... You know, he's on SmackDown. I can't imagine the whole purpose to bring him to SmackDown was just to have him be a jobber some more, like he was on Raw. There's a better opportunity there for him. Baron Corbin's been losing quite a bit. The push that he was getting seems to have stifled out. I mean, this feud can go on for a while, but I'm thinking, yeah, Sami Zayn is going to win this match. He's going to upset Baron Corbin. People are going to be like, what, why? I just think, you know, Sami Zayn needs a momentum-building victory. And while beating Baron Corbin is not as big a deal as it would have been a couple months ago, I just think that, yeah, Sami Zayn needs this. It's a bigger deal for Sami Zayn. And if Sami Zayn beats Baron Corbin, then the SmackDown Live roster gets the depth of it starts to become more prevalent. You can say, well, yeah, Sami Zayn got a win over Baron Corbin. There's all this parody going on with SmackDown Live. It's a good thing. So I think Sami Zayn beats Baron Corbin. Certainly this could go the other way, no doubt about that. But I'm going to go out on a limb here and say Sami Zayn beats Baron Corbin in this match, and it kind of sets himself up and establishes himself as a threat moving forward, a possible challenger to United States Championship or something like that. What do you think?
Well, that sounds good, but yeah, I think they'll probably give it to Sami. He needs something to boost him.
Yeah, he does. So yes, Sami Zayn for the victory over Baron Corbin in an attempt to bolster the ranks, so to speak, and create some depth there. We then get the 6-woman tag team match. Naomi, Charlotte Flair, and Becky Lynch versus Natalya, Carmella, and Tamina, also known as the Welcoming Committee. A couple of different ways you can look at this. The predominant opinion, I'm sure what people are going to think a lot, or what the announced team would like you to think, is that the team of Naomi, Charlotte Flair, and Becky Lynch cannot certainly be united. They all have their own issues. Naomi's the champion. Charlotte wants a title. She told Naomi that at the contract signing after we're done with this. I'm coming after your belt. Becky Lynch and Charlotte, best friends behind the scenes, certainly have had their issues kayfabe-wise as far as storylines go, but they're still portrayed as best friends. You know, and you got the Welcoming Committee with Natalya, the only one who's worth the shit. Carmella and Tamina, yeah, you know, and you got James Ellsworth there for what it's worth. I cannot for the life of me seeing Naomi, Charlotte, and Becky Lynch losing this match.
I hope they don't. No. I hope they don't do that.
Charlotte is brand. I mean, the only way they lose is if they implode on each other and the team disintegrates from within. I don't think it happens here. I think that these three win. And
they
should win. And I think that they're, you know, you want to angle towards, after these three take care of this Welcoming Committee, then you're left with Naomi, Charlotte, and Becky Lynch. you could run a triple threat right there for the SmackDown Women's Championship and make that very interesting.
Yeah, that would be.
And you know, however that goes down. So I think that a lot of people are going to expect, and JBL wanted to sell us, these guys can't get along. I think they get along fine for one night.
They get along when they need to.
Yeah, they get this victory. Charlotte gets, you know, it's been a while since Charlotte got a win. You know, the girl couldn't lose on pay-per-views forever. Now she can't win. So I think Charlotte gets back on the winning track. It'll be good for Becky Lynch to get a statement victory. God knows she needs it. The SmackDown Women's Champion will look good. It's the best thing for all of them. I'm going with Naomi, Charlotte Flair, and Becky Lynch to win this thing.
A wise decision.
Well, thank you, my love. Now we come to the match you were asking about. The Usos versus Gorgeous Dong, also known as Breezango, for the Tag Team Championships. I would love to sit here and say that Breezango wins this thing.
They're not going to.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
I would prefer they win over the Usos, as I said.
I would love to see Breezango get a chance to run with the titles. But I just think, like, it's a stopgap till we get the New Day up there. I think the New Day and the Usos, that's where some money's at. Those two teams have big history with each other. Could Breezango win this thing? Absolutely. They've certainly generated a lot of momentum. They've got the talent. I just don't think they've got the skill to beat a team like the Usos, despite how entertaining that they've been. And yeah, the Usos have been cutting these masterful promos and just bitching these guys down in numerous ways. But I don't, and the Usos are just, they're really talented. They've been turning in, and we haven't seen them wrestle in a while. They've been too busy with these promos. But could Breezango win this thing? Sure. Gorgeous Dong could pull this thing off. I know it would make old Gator thrilled because he loves that team. Yeah. And I would be thrilled, too, because I think they deserve it. I'm very happy that they've got this mini push that they're getting. But I just can't see the SmackDown Tag Team Championship switching here. I think the Usos retain the titles. I think Breezango, this could be one of these matches that flies under the radar and could be a lot better than anybody thinks it is. Because when they turn Breezango loose, these guys can really turn in a good match. And I think maybe you get that out of this. I think it's a much better match than a lot of people will think it is. But yeah, there's very little. I can't see Breezango winning the SmackDown Tag Team Championships. I would love to be wrong.
It would be love to be wrong. If they turn the table a little bit,
yeah,
just for this,
love
you know,
to
match.
Be wrong about this. But I don't think it happens. I think the New Day's coming in for a reason, and that's where, you know, you get American Alpha back involved. You get the New Day in there, and that creates some interest.
Well, that would only give the Usos more reason to get it back if they lost it with New Day and coming back.
Yeah, I could see that.
I would just add another.
I mean, they could hot potato that they could, you know, switch the titles back and forth a little bit. That's certainly possible. I don't see it happening. I think the Usos retain and they buy some more time. This is all about buying time till we can get Kofi healthy, get the New Day in there. And yeah, and when the New Day finally debuts on SmackDown, they'll be fresh again and they'll get a big push, I think. So, but yeah, unfortunately for Gorgeous Dong, I think the Usos win. Another match that is ridiculously easy to predict. The SmackDown Live debut, at least in the ring, in-ring debut of Shinsuke Nakamura versus Dolph Ziggler. There's no way Dolph Ziggler wins this match.
None.
They've set up the entire Backlash pay-per-view around Shinsuke Nakamura. His face is there in the big L. You know, from Backlash. It's so funny. Backlash was just like last September. They had the Backlash where AJ Styles won the WWE Championship. And now we've got Backlash again because they're kind of rebranding all these pay-per-views. But that little side note aside, this whole thing's been built up about Nakamura's debut, the two-time NXT champion.
He's winning.
Dolph Ziggler wins this match by putting in a great show. And I have no doubt that Dolph Ziggler, if he's very competitive, and I'm sure he will be, then that's almost as good as a win for Dolph Ziggler. If they tease like he's going to win, we're talking Shinsuke Nakamura. And Dolph Ziggler's, for all the shit that we give him, the guy is one of the best sellers in all of WWE.
He does a great job.
He really does. And I think he'll do an excellent job of making Shinsuke look really good on the main roster. And this is a good introductory thing where they can see, okay, what works, what doesn't, how's the crowd reacting? You know, you're talking about a crowd in Chicago will be very hot for Shinsuke Nakamura, provided they're not too busy fucking chanting CM Punk the whole damn time. Hopefully they don't do that. But yeah, there's no way you can really dress this thing up. You know, you can put lipstick on a pig, it's still a pig.
With lipstick.
Yeah, exactly. And there's just simply no way no way that Shinsuke Nakamura loses this match. Not with all the build, not with him being the guy on the fucking, the whole Backlash pay-per-view is wrapped around Shinsuke Nakamura. Ziggler gives it a good match, makes it a good match, but Nakamura is going to win this thing.
Agreed.
The final two matches, and at least one of them is really hard to pick, and this is the one that I have the most trouble with, and it's Kevin Owens versus AJ Styles for the United States Championship.
KO.
You think KO wins this thing, huh?
He's my boy.
Over AJ?
I have liked Kevin Owens since the moment he came on. KO wins.
Okay. You're probably right. Kevin Owens, who of course has wiped out Chris Jericho for the foreseeable future with that nasty attack a couple weeks ago. AJ Styles now a full-fledged babyface. They kind of did that under the radar. Here's the thing. Now, a lot of people, the rumors are that they want to build up to an AJ Styles versus Randy Orton feud for the WWE World Championship, which is all fine and great and makes sense. But the problem there is you got both guys who are baby faces, and you almost think that they would want to flip somebody heel. Well, they just turned AJ Styles face, and everybody loves him as a baby face. Kevin Owens, of course, damaged AJ Styles' knee this past week on SmackDown. AJ was selling the knee injury. Maybe that plays a part in this thing. But, and I'm probably going to be wrong about this, but everybody's been saying, you know, this is the weekend where no titles change hands on any of these events on Backlash or NXT TakeOver Chicago. Well, you know, TakeOver did get the one. We're not reviewing TakeOver. Got the UK Championship title change, which I did call. But you're saying, is that going to happen here? No titles are going to change hands here at Backlash.
That's very exciting.
If there's one place where I think the title changes, it's here. I'm going with AJ Styles to win the United States Championship. I know that that may go against my better judgment, but I don't think that they're going to build. I mean, you know, and of course, there's always the issue of, well, when Jericho gets back, they're going to want him to take the title off Kevin Owens and get his revenge that way. And that may be true. And they may kind of mess around with this for a while. But I just think, yeah, AJ Styles winning in Chicago and winning the United States Championship, and they're kind of portraying that Kevin Owens with this whole, I'm the new face of America. Well, you're fucking Canadian, dude. And AJ Styles is as American as they get. A boy from Gainesville, Georgia with that soccer mom haircut and everything.
That needs to be adjusted. That someone, please
but
give him a new haircut.
I'm just thinking, it's like, well, you know, I mean, I guess they could turn Randy Orton heel and make AJ a face if they're going to do that. But you're still, you know, you're talking SummerSlam's, what, 3 months away. So you're going to want to stretch this thing out. Jericho will be back by then, I'm sure. And you know, maybe they do something there. But, I mean, yeah, what do you do with this whole thing? I mean, Jericho is going to come back and feud with Kevin Owens. You know that's going to happen. Where does that leave AJ Styles? And of course, that ties in with the next match, which is the big one for the WWE Championship. But I think that, yeah, there's going to be one title that changes hands at Backlash. I know a lot of times, yeah, you go through things where there's no titles that change hands, but boy, that's awfully boring. And AJ Styles is, Kevin Owens has always got the better of him when they've met so far. So AJ Styles getting a win would be good, unless they're going to, you know, do the whole treatment where, you know, certain things are certain, like Dean Ambrose always beats Kevin Owens, Kevin Owens always beats AJ Styles. It's possible. And you're probably right, love, that Kevin Owens retains the title here. But I'm going to go with AJ Styles to win the United States Championship. I think that it creates some intrigue until they can get Jericho back. You know, Jericho may be on tour with Fozzy for a little while longer. That song Judas is really doing well. It was on NXT TakeOver Chicago, one of their theme songs. The video's great. It's probably my favorite Fozzy song of all time. But I like the idea of AJ Styles defeating Kevin Owens. It would be a really good feel-good moment. Maybe that match goes on last. If that goes on last, AJ Styles is winning this thing. But I think there's a very good chance you're right that Kevin Owens wins. But I'm going with AJ Styles on this thing, just on a hunch. I probably am wrong about this.
All right. Sometimes hunches pay off.
Sometimes they do. But I think, yeah, AJ Styles winning the United States Championship from Kevin Owens makes for a great story, good feel-good moment. There hasn't been a lot in Chicago for people to feel good about this entire weekend. The stuff that happened at TakeOver Chicago last night, like I said, not reviewing it, nothing for the baby faces went right. Virtually nothing went right. You know, Tommaso Ciampa turning on Johnny Gargano at the end of that whole thing, his DIY implodes, all this stuff. you know, and you're looking at this card thinking, okay, where's the good moments other than Shinsuke Nakamura? You got to have some positive moment. AJ Styles winning the United States Championship would make up for a lot of the shit that you can't just have 2 days of just gut punches.
You could,
but I'd be like, Vince, dude, man, I mean, that's kind of rough, man. We're going to send everybody just home all, you know, do you think that? Shut up. All right. You're right, Vince. You got it. So, yeah, I'm going with AJ Styles in the one feel good moment from this whole fucking weekend in Chicago. The main event, Randy Orton takes on Jinder Mahal for the WWE Championship. I'm surprised there's a lot of people who think Jinder might actually pull this thing off. I don't think so. I think that they have built him up. To me, this whole thing is a marketing ploy because WWE is breaking into India and they're breaking into that market. So Jinder is a marketable face that they can attach and get all the people in India and all the Punjabi population.
Not make him the winner.
Make him the champion. I think that's going a bit far. Vince isn't about
but
to
is
do
it.
Maybe not. I mean, Jinder looks.
That's a good story.
Jinder's been very, very good in this match. But he's been booked. When you look at somebody who's been booked as strong as he has, where all he does is he's just wins. Yeah, Sami Zayn, win. AJ Styles, win. Pins Randy Orton. Lays out Randy Orton. You know, when you're booked that strong, usually they kind of balance things out at these pay-per-views. And I just, it's great. You know, if you mark, you get Jinder involved to get the India population invested in this match. But you don't put him over all the way because then everybody, your main market, which is the United States of America, is like, what the fuck? This guy's our champion? Wait a second. It's bad enough Brock Lesnar vanishes for months on end, but now we got Jinder Mahal who can't win legitimately. And that's not a knock on him for, you know, being Indian or anything ethnical or anything like that. I just think that from a pure marketing standpoint, you don't go all the way. You put the belt on Jinder Mahal, then you're totally invested in this guy. Because he is the face of your company. And as impressive as Jinder is, and yeah, Randy Orton can absorb the loss and it won't matter to his legacy one damn bit. I guess if AJ loses and Jinder wins, then that makes more sense. But I just don't see them putting the belt on Jinder Mahal. It's certainly possible. He's gotten this great push that's seemingly come out of nowhere. But I just think it's one thing to market him a certain way to get in a certain demographic, but if you're going to go all the way with this guy and say, he's my man, at least for now, you know, like they did with AJ Styles. I don't think so. I mean, of course, it raises the question, where does Randy Orton go from there? You know, unless they're trying to build up to Randy and Shinsuke sooner rather than later. And that's a hell of a match to build up to. But I can't see them going that far with this thing. It's gone far enough. I've sat there slack jawed a few times and say, wow. Jinder Mahal just pinned Randy Orton. Wow. Jinder Mahal just beat AJ Styles. Are they really going to do it again with it all on the line? I know the Bollywood boys, Singh brothers, will be involved in this match. But man, I'm looking and saying, okay, it does raise the question, what's next for the WWE Championship? I mean, Kevin Owens and Chris Jericho are going to get into it once Chris gets back. But yeah. What happens at the top of the card? And I don't know, but I don't think that you do something that drastic at this SmackDown exclusive event. I think that, I don't know if they're going to bring in anybody. They're going to draft somebody. There's nobody at NXT who really you can bring up that would make that big of an impact. Maybe John Cena coming back sometime. Maybe that's, they want to do Randy Orton and John Cena for the 945th time. I don't know. But really?
Thrilling.
Very. But I can't see them putting Jinder Mahal over all the way here. I don't see it happening. I'm going to go with Randy Orton to retain the title. But yeah, what you say is a lot of people are echoing that sentiment that maybe Jinder Mahal does take this thing. Maybe they are going to push him. You know, is it the worst thing in the world for Jinder Mahal to win the title? Absolutely not. And it creates a big, interesting sort of situation where you've got this very different guy at the top of the company. I just don't think it's happening. I think Randy Orton hits that RKO somewhere along the way and Jinder Mahal's down for the count. But yeah, like a lot of the stuff on this card, sure, it could go the other way, absolutely. But I'm going, my gut instinct says Randy Orton retains the WWE Championship here, but maybe not. So yeah, running it down again, once the Ty Dillinger wins, Luke Harper, Sami Zayn, Naomi Charlotte, and Becky, the Usos, Nakamura, AJ Styles, and Randy Orton. So
there you have it.
There you have it, folks. That is the Backlash 2017 preview show. And you've got our thoughts. My lovely wife jumped in here to make sure I wasn't just talking to myself, which I've done a lot lately.
Yes, you have.
I know. It's like I said, it's been a weird weekend. Everybody was out doing stuff, busy. I mean, Rick's whitewater rafting, Greg's at soccer things, you know. I don't know who's here, where they are. They're all just, you know, old Gator, God knows where he's at. You know, he's on a 10-day bender. You never know with him.
Yeah, cavorting or something.
He's cavorting is a likely scenario. But anyway, that does it, guys. That takes care of the Raw and SmackDown live reviews for this past week and the Backlash 2017 preview show. It should be an interesting pay-per-view. I'm hoping that it goes well. I mean, Payback was a lot better than any of us thought. I'm hoping Backlash delivers that way. It's built kind of like Payback. We're going into it. You don't have a whole lot of expectations other than AJ and Kevin Owens, which should be the show that the match that steals the show. The rest of it, yeah, we'll see. Maybe they'll deliver in ways that we didn't anticipate. We'll see what happens. But let's give you guys some contact information and get you boys and girls out of here on episode number 194. We're only six away from 200, babe.
Dang.
And I think we'll quit after 200. That'll be enough. No. All right, that's enough. We're done. Anyway, if you guys want to email the show, you got questions, comments, what do you think of, how do you think Backlash is going to go? Well, I wouldn't even write in with that because by the time I get it, it'll be over. But anyway, you know, just write in your questions, your comments. Are you concerned about the whereabouts of all my friends this weekend? I am too, kind of. You know, it's kind of depressing.
Ken's disappeared.
Where is Ken? He was here last night getting drunk, so I'm going to have to text him.
Maybe he's still sleeping.
He might be. It's awfully late, but anyway, if you got questions or comments, please send your emails in to attitudeofaggression@gmail.com. We'll do our best to read them on the air and answer your questions. If you want to go to the website where all 194 episodes of the podcast are available for free streaming, it is www.attitudeofaggression.com. Once again, www.attitudeofaggression.com. Go there, check it out. You can interact with our social media bar as well, which will hook you into all of our various social media outlets. For instance, Facebook, facebook.com/attitudeofaggression. If you go there, please hit the like button because we really like the likes. On Twitter, you can follow us at Attitude Ag. That is at Attitude AGG. We're up above 3,700 followers. Woo, baby. Almost a 4,000.
Nice. Thank you, guys. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Following. You can be the next in a long line of dissatisfied customers at Attitude AGG.
Take it up the butt.
You know, we didn't have to go there. It's kind of calm here. Old Gator's not here. It's calm. You know, you just had to take it
down. In that case, take it up the butt.
Okay. Thank you, love. It sounds better when you say it like that. On Pinterest, you can do a search for Attitude of Aggression at Pinterest.com. Check out our board, see what we're pinning and posting. And on Instagram, we're at Attitude of Aggression, which is all one word. And that's all she wrote, boys and girls, here on episode number 194 of the podcast. We will be back this week. Hopefully, we'll get old Gator, track him down, get him off the juice, see if we can snatch him away from all these women who are just clamoring for his bone.
There are many.
There are too many.
And I'm afraid for him.
Yeah.
There's too many.
Too many women clamoring for that bone.
Too many.
It's not just a catchy song where we grab our bones. It's the real thing. So.
Truth.
Exactly. So anyway, that's going to do it for this episode of the podcast. But until next time, wrestling fans and aggressionaholics, y'all stay aggressive and y'all do it with attitude. We'll catch you soon for more action. So long.